family. I'm Imani, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Imani.
All right, I've been set up. I ran into Andy yesterday in the hallway, and he was like, yeah, we're doing the meeting together. You want to go first, or should I go first? And I was like, oh, I don't care. You know, the order don't matter to me, so he went first. I was set up. I got to follow him. I'm just so grateful to be here for CPRCNA 25-year anniversary. I love this convention. My first NA convention was 14 years ago. I was a newcomer. And, you know, I came down with my treatment program. We stood in the line. We did the indigent newcomer thing. And, you know, I got little free passes to go to Dough Roller and get food. And the treatment program set us up in the hotel. And, you know, all these addicts were here, the main speakers. I was so inspired, you know, and I've come down every year since, every year. And I'm just so grateful. When I was asked to speak, you know, to do a workshop, I was like, yeah, sure. And, you know, right before I started to come here tonight, I got real nervous, like real, like shaking in my boots nervous. I was sitting up front, wasn't too many people in the room, but I said, you know, I'm going to share my story. So here it goes. You know, just like the brother just shared, I'm sure I was always an addict. You know, I always liked more. Anything that gave me a euphoric feeling, I liked to do more of it. And I remember, you know, the drug trucks would come to our elementary school and have all the different, you know, paraphernalia and drugs in it and say no to drugs. This is probably even before say no to drugs, but basically that was the message. Say no to drugs, right? And I too was a very smart kid, you know, A's. The only C I would ever get was in handwriting. Because I was trying to write fast and finish first, right? So I would write real fast, and it would be like chicken scratch, but it would be all correct. So, you know, I wasn't going to do no drugs. That was stupid. It was like dope, you know, say no to, you know, dope. Dope is dumb and all that kind of stuff. So I believed in all of that. And I remember at age 12, some of my peers had started smoking marijuana. And I couldn't believe it. You know, I thought that was crazy. They'd be in the back hallways, and you could smell the weed, and it would be real stank. And I'd be like, wow, why are they doing that, you know? Man, that summer, me and my girlfriend, we started experimenting first with cigarettes. And I would inhale it, and it would make me gag, right? But I had to get it right, because what was really important to me was to be able to hang and, you know, look older than I am and all of that kind of stuff. So what happened was, we were hanging out with some older boys. They were like seniors, 17 years old, that kind of thing. And she and I, we were 12. And so they were talking about getting high the night before and being down the park and smoking. And they were talking about rolling roaches. And I remember I literally visualized that they had rolled roaches. I mean, I'm 12, you know. And they were talking about how high they got. And so, you know, one of them pulled out the paper. I mean, I can literally see it to this day. Dude's name was Cabby. I can see him. He pulls out the paper. He puts the weed in it. He rolls it, fires up, and my girlfriend looks at me, and I look at her. And then they passed it, and it came to me first. And she gave me a look like, don't fuck it up, you know. Like you better inhale correct, right? Don't show our age. And I remember I pulled it in like we had been practicing on the cigarettes, and it went in, and it went down smooth. And it came out smooth. And I was like, oh, shit, that was easy. I mean, compared to tobacco, you know, and I blew it out, you know, now I'm trying to look cool, do a little circles like he was saying, that sort of thing, like I know what I'm doing. And then I passed it. And I remember the rest of that summer, I smoked marijuana every single day. Not to get high, but just to impress the older kids that were smoking it. I never even felt it. I never even felt it. And what happened was, it was in the 70s, like 74 to be exact. It was 1974. I was in one of those basements, you know, with the album covers and probably maggot hair, Parliament Funkadelic cover or something. Big pile of weed. What was wrong with grown folk? They were like, you know, sharing weed with the kids. I mean, this was somebody's older brother, you know. And he's got like a big old pile of weed, and we're all sitting in the circle. It's one of them 70s situations where bongs, pipes, weed, everything is being passed in the circle. And it just kept going. It kept going. And things were coming to me quicker than I could hit and pass. And all of a sudden, the room went psychedelic. The room went psychedelic. I could hear colors. I could taste sound. And all my senses started to merge. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, this is what it's all about. Because I was just smoking to look cool. I wasn't smoking to get hot. But from that first time that I actually felt it and that euphoric feeling, I said, I have found the answer. The answer to what? I was 12. Was there nothing going on, you know? I don't come, you know, thank God, man, I came from a loving home, you know, both parents in the home. I don't have any history of abuse, none of that. But for me, it was all about impressing my friends and looking older than I was. That's all it was about. Trying to impress the boys, really. It wasn't even about my girlfriends. So what happened was I smoked weed every day, all throughout the rest of my school year. I went from, like I said, practically straight A's other than that one C, you know, to I can pass with a C. Why work so hard, you know? Then it was like, oh, a D is a passing grade? I didn't even know that. Like, oh, I can only show up for the exams, basically, and pass them, and I ain't even got to go to class the rest of the time. Like, I can just smoke. So I went from being the student who thought the kids in the back of the hallway was just, like, had lost their minds to being that student, you know, to eventually barely even showing up at school. And I managed to graduate by the skin of my teeth. You know, I found out you only needed a certain amount of credits to graduate. So that was all I needed to get was that amount, not one over. And I literally did not get one over. I almost didn't graduate high school because of a half a gym credit. One half a gym credit, you know. I didn't want to get sweaty and not be cute by the end of the day. So I wasn't trying to take gym, right? So what happened was I graduated high school. And I became like a card-carrying member of not Narcotics Anonymous, but like anything that was pro-weed, you know, pro-marijuana, pro-weed, I was down with it. Let's legalize the shit, right? So I became Rasta, right? So now weed is like a sacrament. It's holy and it's, you know, religious, right? So I'm smoking ganja, 90 going north. But what I had started to do by the time I turned 18 is kind of experiment with some other drugs, you know, snort a line of coke here. Tried PCP. I definitely did not like that high, so I didn't do that too much. And so I'm smoking weed every day, but I didn't have a healthy fear of drugs because from the beginning, you know, it was like nothing. Then it was euphoric. I could do a couple of lines of coke, put it down, you know, no big deal, party, right? So what's the problem? But the disease progresses, and some things started to show up in my life. Like, I got married when I was very young, had three kids, and then once we were divorced and my mom died, now I'm not just smoking to be smoking. I'm beginning to self-medicate. You know, I got some issues going on in my life. I'm probably depressed, for real. My mama died, my husband is gone, and I'm taking care of three kids by myself. So the disease is progressing. Now I'm smoking, you know, every day, all day. Right, I can't do nothing without smoking. I'm talking literally, I'm, you know, cooking a meal and, you know, I'm smoking. And so what happened was I was going to go to this concert and I needed to stay up all night for the job that I was doing at the time. And, of course, the weed was going to make me go to sleep. So I got the bright idea, why don't I just lace it so I can stay up? And I go to the street to try to find some powdered cocaine because my ex-husband was always the one that would cop. I never went out and had to cop the coke, right? So I didn't have any connections. I realized I don't even have a coke connection, right? I called my brother. I had never even gotten high with my brother. I didn't nerve to call him, ask him, did he know where some coke was? He was like, no. You know, he's 10 years older than me. I'm his little sister. He's like, hell no, you know? And so I had to just go to the street and ask. And I'll never forget, dude said, there's no powder out here, but it's rock. You know, it's rock right over there. And I was like, what's rock? And he told me. And I said, well, can I put it on weed? He was like, yeah, crush it up. You can do that. So that's exactly what I did. And the bottom line is, it did exactly what I hoped it would do. I stayed up all night. I had a wonderful time at the concert. I went to see Roy Ayers in the park. And I thought I had found the answer one more time. Right? why smoke weed and crash when you can lace it? Oh, man. So that was great. And I wasn't feeling depressed no more. Damn, the depression gone too. So it went from smoking weed on the weekend to now I can't even get through the middle of the week without smoking. And y'all know what happened. Within 6 weeks, I'm smoking every day, all day. I'm smoking crack every day, all day. And I'll never forget the guy that I had been copping from, one of the guys. I was just going to the street. One of the guys I've been copping from and spending all my money with, now I'm smoking every day. So the money ran out. And I went to do with short money. Like, it wasn't that short. I had $7. I was trying to buy a dime. And he told me to come back when I have the rest. And so the ugly side of the game showed up. I was like, oh, man. Like, you know, we're all communal and shit. We share, you know. And the disease started to progress. It's getting ugly now. So what happened was, 6 months in, the guy I was dating at the time, he looked at me and he said, you're an addict. Because I couldn't do anything without smoking. He didn't know I was lacing my weed with coke at that point. He had no idea. But I couldn't even get through anything. I had to fire up. And he just looked at me one day and grabbed me by my arms and he said, you're an addict. Like, he just looked so confused, so perplexed, like, you're an addict. And the words just rang true. You know, he was the problem. He had to go. I broke up with him. You know, I was like, I'm not an addict. You know, if you would just support me more, and if you know I'm struggling with the kids and blah, 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 and if you were a better man, you know, I wouldn't be smoking all day. I'm breaking up with you, right? So I broke up with him. And I just, things just spiraled down. So in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, utter desperation, I picked up the phone, I dialed 411, and I asked for a drug hotline, and they gave me the NA helpline. And that's how I found Narcotics Anonymous. And I like to say that I came in and got clean. That's not what happened. I came in, and people like Andy was talking about hypes in his neck. And he's a dope fiend and a true dope fiend. And I'm like, oh, y'all need this program. As a matter of fact, y'all need this cult. Because I was hearing stuff like, my life was never so good until I got here. And I turned it over to my higher power. And all that kind of stuff, right? So I was like, this is a cult. But I just want them to teach me how to get back to smoking weed safely. And I'm going to hang just long enough for that, right? And y'all were talking about total abstinence. And I was like, I don't want to be totally abstinent. I just want to do some control using. Like, I don't want to do step one, right? I want to go straight to step three. I want to turn my will and my life over so it can get better, but I don't want to stop. So I tried that for 2 years, right? And by the end, I was no longer identifying out. All them stories I had heard when I first came in the room, by the end, all of that was happening to me. You know, I wound up, in the crack house next door. My true bottom was when I was next door in the crack house and I could hear my kids playing through the walls, but I just couldn't escape to get to them. I just could not get out. And I would hear them wake up in the morning, right, because I'm stuck overnight. And I would hear them wake up, but I just could not get out of there. What happened was I would go in and out of treatment. I met a man in treatment. Of course, I picked the craziest guy in the program. And I got hooked up with him, and I had a baby. And my baby tested positive to crack cocaine. And it was because of that that I finally surrendered. The bottom line is, not only was that baby going to be taken away from me, but so were my 3 kids, the older ones. And so the topic is carrying the message beyond the rooms. You know, when that social worker came in and told me that my baby had tested positive to crack cocaine, I thought that that day was the worst thing that could ever happen. You know, I always talk about how I never knew what the word wretched meant, but I felt wretched. I felt like really I had lost my soul. I felt so horrible that I could not stop using even when I was pregnant. And you never know how God is going to use your experience, use your story. And what happened was once I got clean, one of the things that I realized was I had tried to get help beyond the rooms for the whole time that I was in the rooms. I had gone in and out of treatment programs, and there were no programs that were really for a mom or for a woman that was pregnant. And as a direct result of that, I co-founded and started an organization that gets money for the program. And I said that with hesitance because we do get like a lot of federal money. We've been able to do that for treatment programs that take care of women and children where a mom can come into treatment with her baby. And I just said it with hesitance because we get all the money for the programs like I'm broke. So as I was saying it, I was like, it sounds like a wonderful thing, but and it is. But I personally get no benefit from it. The organization is very successful, and I'm very proud of that, the work that we're able to do. So carrying the message beyond the rooms. The people who saw me in that neighborhood, you know, where I was running in and out of the crack house, you know, even when my baby was first born and I hadn't gotten clean yet, and he was in my Jerry carrier, you know, the little thing that you have your baby strapped to you, and I was going in and out of the crack house. You know, now they see me. Now they see me as a mom raising my kids. You know, there's a message in that. They see whatever that girl is doing, it's working. Because whatever she's doing, she's turned her life around, you know. I also think about how, you know, the integrity that I have on my job comes directly from the principles that I've learned here in Narcotics Anonymous. Because for real, you know, I don't want to work. You know, I have an addict friend who always says that he doesn't want to work, he just want to get paid and buy himself nice things. That's what I want. I just want to get paid and buy myself nice things, you know. But because of the principles that I learned here in this program, you know, I have some integrity today. And that's carrying the message beyond the rooms. Within my family, you know, I'm actually the youngest. I'm the baby, too. So that means that for real, I'm used to the older, you know, my older siblings, as I was growing up, handling everything. But now I can be responsible. You know, I'm the one that they actually consult and look to about a lot of things, you know. And they know I'm in Narcotics Anonymous, and they're very grateful for y'all, you know. They're real grateful for y'all. And that's definitely carrying the message beyond the rooms. The last thing I'm going to say, because I'm going to cut it short, but the last thing I'm going to say is last year I had the pleasure for my job to organize this event where I brought moms from across the country to Washington, D.C., and I brought heads of different treatment programs to Washington, D.C., and we organized this event with the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. And one day, one of the emails actually, you know, came in, and for the first time, I like, because, you know, we use acronyms, ONDCP, right? But I actually, like, read the signature and then the address and the name of the, I was like, the White House Office of National Drug Control Policy. How did that happen, right? A crackhead like me actually organizing an event where they actually feel like that I have something legitimate to offer, you know? And for the first 5 years of my job, I used to say, what's my title? I'm just like crackhead mom. Like, you know, like that was like, what's my title? I'm crackhead mom, you know? And it's the bottom line is, you know, carrying the message beyond the rooms, you know? You never know how God is going to use your story. So, you know, that's my message of hope, that no matter what you've experienced, I know that if it was not for being pregnant and going through what I went through, that I wouldn't even be qualified to speak with the level of expertise that I do within the work that I do, right? So that's my message. Thanks for letting me share.